Athene, and he's going to tell us about how to, or somehow, how to spy on your neighbors.
Okay. So good afternoon. Well, the first thing I want to do is to thank the organizers for inviting me to give a talk here. And well, I'm going to tell you about this game that we found, which is actually a Bell inequality. And during my talk, starting from this game, I'm going to tell you about some other results that we derived, and somehow go along the line that what Valerio said in his talk yesterday or 2 days ago, I don't remember, saying that three parties are much more than two. Okay? So somehow, like, when studying correlations, what happens for tripartite systems is much more complex than what we see for bipartite, for the bipartite situation. And of course, although, I mean, I'm here listed as a single author, let's say, what I'm going to tell you is has been obtained collaboration and discussion with all the people here. There are people from Geneva, Singapore, Brussels, Bristol, and so on. And six of these people are here, so there's Mafalda, Nicola, Dani, Marco, Rodrigo, and Valerio. Okay, so the scenario I will consider is the standard one that everybody's familiar with. So there are the n-distant parties. Sometimes it's called the m-box, the box-wall scenario. So what I will consider are m-parties and distant observers who have access to a system, and in this system they can perform a macroscopic action that I label by this index x, and they get an output that I label by by a. Okay, so they keep putting this input, getting the output, and they compare the results and they accumulate statistics so they can estimate this joint probability distribution of the outputs given the inputs. Okay. Well, I'm going to put some introduction that probably is known by everybody here, but I think it puts things in a context, okay? And then the interesting thing is that, in principle, these are vectors. The only constraint they have to satisfy is that they are given by positive numbers, satisfying some normalization conditions. But now if we put some physics in the picture, then the things become more interesting. And because physical principles translate into limits on correlations, so in particular, for instance, we have that if we think that the boxes produce the outputs given the inputs based on some classical instructions that were put in the boxes, then we know that the correlations that are established should satisfy, it is possible to decompose the correlation that we see in this form, okay? So like some lambdas that they represent the classical instructions that were in the boxes, and the response by each of the boxes depend on these pre-established instructions plus the input. And so this mathematical equation is corresponds to the standard EPR correlations or local hidden variables or whatever, but it has a clear operational meaning, okay? So it's what you can do if you put the boxes together, you prepare the boxes together, you wrote some classical instructions, and you give the boxes to the distant observers. Okay, then, well, we know there is something beyond classical physics, which is quantum physics, and so what happens then if we know that the boxes were prepared in a quantum manner and you put quantum instructions inside the boxes? Well, then we know that the probability can be written like some local measurements acting on a global quantum state, okay? So I would like to emphasize that here I don't put any restriction on the quantum state and the measurements you are performing, okay? It can be any dimension or whatever. So it's just, I mean, some correlations are quantum whenever there exists state in a given Hilbert space and local measurements such that according to the Born rule, you can obtain the correlations that you see. And finally, there is a larger set, which is a set of non-signaling correlations, and what you want is that the correlations satisfy these linear constraints. So what a subset of the party sees, the statistics that a subset of the party sees, does not depend on what the others do, okay? Otherwise, you could use this effect to signal, okay, faster than light. Okay, and this is what I represent here. And this defines a set of non-signaling correlations. Well, we also know that the set of classical is strictly smaller than the set of quantum. This is Bell's theorem. And we also know that the set of quantum is strictly smaller than the set of non-signaling correlations. This was a consequence of the Popescu-Rolic machine. And if you want, I think it's good to have a geometrical representation of these objects. So this is, for instance, for the simplest case where the input is when you have two parties and you put a binary input and you get a binary output. Then, well, here there is the space of classical correlations, which is a convex set with a finite number of extreme points. This is a polytope. So you should interpret it here. The object is, well, closed, and it goes on like this. I'm not very good drawing, but I hope that you will get the picture. So there are the non-signaling correlations, which are on top of that. And in between, there are the set of quantum correlations, which is, again, convex, but it's not a polytope. So this is a curve bubble on top of this classical facet. And these facets for the classical polytope, which are non-trivial because they are violated by quantum correlations, are the Berlin inequalities. So in this particular case, this is the well-known Clausewitz-Shimoni-Holt inequality, whose local bound is 2, the quantum bound is 2 square root of 2, and the non-signaling bound is 4. Okay, I think this is well-known by everybody here. So for this Gaussian neighbor input, our original motivation was the following. So you see here, what I said is that whenever you have one of these non-trivial facets, usually we used to assume that there is a quantum bubble, okay? So there is a quantum violation. So we wonder whether this is a universal or there are some situations where you have tasks or Bell inequalities for which there is no violation by quantum mechanics, okay? So in other words, whether all Bell inequalities are relevant in the sense of being violated by quantum mechanics. And that was our motivation. So I want an inequality which is non-trivial in the sense that it's violated by non-signaling correlations, but for which classical and quantum correlations perform equally well. Now, so we were not the first ones considering the question, and there was a previous paper by the group in Bristol where they showed that the quantum correlations do not give any advantage for non-local quantum computation. And you can understand this as some sort of Bell inequality with no quantum advantage. I mean, there is, however, in my view, there is, let's say, well, a problem or there is something that I don't like about this result, or which is not entirely satisfactory about the result, which is the fact that none of the inequalities is tight. And by tight, I mean that they are not completely tangent to the set of local points. And pictorially, this means, this is an example, okay, well, here it has to be tangent, okay? I'm not very good drawing, okay? But you have to understand, I mean, pictorially you can understand if I take a tangent to the quantum set, well, this is a Bell inequality where there is no quantum advantage. Both the classical set and the quantum set are on the same side of the inequality, and clearly it's violated by non-signaling correlations. But I don't think it says much about the structure of this set, okay? So I would say that if you don't impose the tightness of the inequality, it's, say, relatively easy to find these objects, okay? You only have to start for a standard tight Bell inequality, and you tilt it until you make it tangent to the quantum set, okay? So, and unfortunately, none of the inequalities given in this paper are tight, okay? So I think it's an interesting result because it shows that for the task that they consider quantum correlations do not give an advantage, but I think it's not entirely satisfactory because the inequality was not tight. Okay, so what we want to do is something like this. What we want to obtain is a situation where local and quantum give the same, okay? So there is no quantum bubble on top of the inequality, and no signaling correlations give you something better, okay? So this is our motivation, and in order to do that, we introduce a game which is quite easy to explain. So you have the n distant observers, and what they have to do, they receive an input, and they have to produce an output. And the task they have to achieve, each observer has to guess the input that the other party receives, the party on the right. Okay? So this is the task I want to achieve. Ai has to be equal to x of I plus 1. Okay? This guy has to guess this input, this input, and so on, so on. And the last one has to guess the first input. Okay, so the inequality then is the probability that they achieve this goal, okay? And, well, as it is now, you can see that this inequality is kind of trivial, okay? So you get the same result for local, quantum, and non-signaling correlation, which is equal to 2. So it's not interesting. But now you can put some more structure into the inequality. So what you say is that you will have a promise on the input. I mean, here, you see, I sum over all inputs. So it could be 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, all possible inputs were considered in the inequality. But now I will put a promise. So by some means, the parties have a promise that the inputs satisfy a given property. Okay, so, and I represent this promise by this function, which can take values 0 and 1. Okay, so if the function is equal to 1, the inputs satisfy the promise. If it's equal to 0, the inputs do not satisfy the promise, and then I put the probability. So I weight these probabilities. Now, what you can see is that for all promises, the local and the quantum bound are still equal, okay? But what is interesting is that for some promises, the local and quantum bound, which was 2, goes down to 1, okay? And for some promises, non-signaling correlations give you something that is larger than 1, okay? And the easiest case is for 3 parties, we have the promise that the sum of the inputs is equal to 0, and the corresponding inequality is the one here. You see the inputs? The sum of the 3 inputs is always equal to 0. You have either 3 zeros or 2 ones and 1 0. And you see, you have to guess the input, okay? So here you have 1, 1, and 0. Okay, so the inequality is very simple once you give the promise. And you can prove that this is, and I will tell you how you can prove that, that either, both classical and quantum correlations achieve 1. And you can compute the violation by machine learning correlation. This is an easy problem. And you can get that this is larger, which is it's equal to 5 over 3. Okay? So, well, we have a first possible example of a Bell inequality where classical and quantum give the same, and machine learning correlations give more. And now what we did, we generalized this for more parties, and we took the same promise for odd n. And for even n, we stopped with, we took n minus 1 inputs, okay? And I will tell you why we did that, okay? And now what you can do for the corresponding Bell inequalities, you can see that the local and quantum ones are always equal to 1. Again, I will tell you why later. And numerically, we observe that the non-signaling value increases with n, okay? It cannot be larger than 2, okay? This is a value which is valid for all promises. But you can see that it increases with n. And actually, what you can also prove is that for any n, the value is always larger than 4/3. So analytically, you can prove that there is always a violation by non-signaling correlations. And what is interesting is that we could even prove that, numerically, although it's an analytical computation, we could, it's analytical, it's an exact calculation, we could prove that the inequalities from 3 to 7 were tied. Okay? So we chose these for even n, to guarantee that the inequalities were tied. If we take here the sum of over all n, for even n, the inequality is not tied. Okay? So, all this to say that for 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, we have tasks where classical quantum correlation is the same. And so, these are inequalities which are, say, irrelevant for quantum mechanics. Okay, so this is the first thing I wanted to say. Okay? Well, I think this is a Manard result or not. Well, you may like it or not. But the nice thing is that it gives, we found several applications of the results to some problems, okay? So the first one is related to the problem of Gleason correlation. So here the problem is to study the generalization of the celebrated Gleason theorem to a multipartite scenario. So I guess that most of you know the Gleason theorem, but I will review it here. So basically, Gleason theorem is just a map from positive operators, from measurements, let's say, to probability distributions, okay? So you want a map V that maps positive operators into numbers that are between 0 and 1. And you want that if the number, the operators give a resolution of the identity, so define a measurement, then the sum of these numbers is equal to 1. So it's a proper probability distribution. Okay? Now, it has been shown by several people that all these maps have the standard quantum form. Okay? So it's just the trace of the positive operator with a quantum state. Okay. Now, the theorem has been generalized to a multipartite scenario, and so here what you do something very similar. So you have measurements for Alice and Bob, so you want to map this into a probability, and you want that if the measurements satisfy the identity, if they define proper measurements, the sum is equal to the identity, the sum of these maps is equal to 1. But we add an extra constraint, which is the following. So we also want that the no signaling somehow is respected, okay? So if you sum over the measurements by Bob, what you see is independent of what Bob, of the measurement chosen by Bob, okay? What Alice sees is independent of what Bob does, okay? You see here there is, I sum over the Bob's measurement result for two different choices of measurements, and I get the same result on Alice's, okay? And, several people prove again that in this case, the map that you have is a trace of a witness, which is an operator which is positive on product states, with the tensor product of the measurements, okay? So what you see here, positivity, it's not needed, okay? I only need things that are operators that are positive on product of positive operators, okay? So I don't need the full positivity of the state, and this is why I can put here an entanglement witness. So now the question is, in principle, this set is strictly larger than the quantum set, but maybe not, okay? So that was the question, whether this set of correlation that I will call the Gleason's correlations are larger than the quantum set. And for instance, this problem was considered, and it was shown that for the bipartite case, although potentially it might be larger because you only demand that the operator is positive on product states, actually the set of correlations that you get is the same as in quantum correlations. So the fact that you don't demand that the operator is fully positive does not give more correlations, okay? Well, in our case, we could prove that when you go to more parties, the set of Gleason correlation is larger than the set of quantum correlations. So while Gleason theorem says gives you quantum probabilities for one party, quantum correlations for two parties, this is no longer valid when you have three or more parties. And the reason is because we derive an example of Gleason correlations that were violating guess your neighbor input, okay? And since we know that guess your neighbor input cannot be violated by quantum mechanics, then we know that the Gleason correlations are larger than the set of quantum correlations. Now I will tell you how we did that, okay? So, because then it appears a connection with an unexpected connection with a different concept. So I will make some sort of a small parenthesis. So in order to do that, we have to study, I have to introduce an element that might be known by some of you, which is the concept of unextendable product basis. So an extendable product basis is just a set of orthogonal product states that cannot, for which there is no product state which is orthogonal to this set. Okay? So you have some product states, psi I, all of them are orthogonal, but you cannot find a new product state which is orthogonal to the set, to the states psi I. Okay? Well, these states have interesting properties, and what can be shown is that if you take the projector onto all these product states, remember that these states are orthogonal, well, you can see that for a value of epsilon, which is strictly positive, this defines an entanglement witness, so it defines an operator which is positive on product states. Okay? So I'm skipping some of the details, but you only have to keep in mind that you have product states that are orthogonal and cannot be completed, for which you cannot find another product state which is orthogonal to them, this unextendable product basis, you can follow a construction and derive an entanglement witness. So then let's see what happens when you consider one of the examples of unextendable product basis. So we took perhaps the simplest example, which is for three qubits. Okay? So this is an example of one of these unextendable product basis. Well, it's called a basis, but it's not a basis. It's just a set of product states. Well, it's relatively easy to see that if you try to add a product state which is orthogonal to the previous one, you cannot, okay? Well, I mean, I'm not going to do it, but it's relatively easy to see because, I mean, you cannot. Well, Ravi proved that all unextendable product bases for three qubits have this form, okay? Now I will take the guess your neighbor input that I showed you before, and I will call the computational basis 0, and the other basis I will call it 1 for each party, okay? And then I will associate to each product state, I will associate a probability, okay? So you see here, that is computational basis, so this is input 0, okay? So the parties measuring the computational basis, they are applying measurement 0. And the result is 0, so I associate this probability distribution. Now here, you see, the first party is measuring the computational basis, so I put 0. But the first party wants to see somehow the first result, so this is why I put 1, okay, result 1. For F and G, I put 1 and 1 because it's no longer the computational basis. And this goes with 1 and this goes with 0, okay? And I apply the same trick for the rest of elements. So there is a 1-to-1 correspondence between this unextendable product basis and the guess your neighbor input, okay? So you take one of the unextendable elements in the unextendable product basis, you map it. I hope it's clear how I map it into a joint probability distribution, and I get guess your neighbor input. And it's because of this coincidence that you can see that the witness that you can construct from the unextendable product basis violates this guess your neighbor input, okay? And this is why we prove that Gleason correlation are larger than the quantum correlations. And now you may wonder whether this is a general connection or not. I mean, for us, it was surprising. I mean, these unextendable product bases were invented in a completely different context in the study of bound entanglement. And, well, you can see that there is a connection there. Right? And what you can prove is that if you have a set of orthogonal product states, so what you can do, you associate to the set of orthogonal product states, you associate joint probability distributions. And the way you do it, you take, for each local party, you take states that are orthogonal and you associate to those states a basis, okay? Like I did before. And then you can map each product state into a joint probability. So what you do, you can construct a Bell inequality given this product state. Using what I did before, you associate a joint probability, you sum all these probabilities. Now, since the states were orthogonal, the probabilities are orthogonal. So if you sum all of them, they define a projector, both in the classical sense and the quantum sense. So the maximal violation you can get both for classical and quantum mechanics is 1, okay? Because it's just you're summing orthogonal possibilities, so you cannot get more than 1. And surprisingly, no signaling can break this rule, okay? So using this trick, whenever you give me a set of orthogonal product states, I give you a Bell inequality for which classical and quantum the classical and quantum values equal to 1. What is more interesting is that if this set of product states cannot be completed, then I can play the previous trick, and I can prove that non-signaling correlations give a violation. Okay, so the inequality is non-trivial. And this is, for instance, if you apply this trick, you get the guess your neighbor input. So to summarize this part, So from any UPB, we have abelian equality where this is satisfied. If the set is an extensible product basis, the inequality is violated by no signaling because it's violated by the weakness associated to the bound entangled state associated to the unextendable product basis. So using this trick, we have constructed new Bell inequalities that are tight, so that are irrelevant in the sense of not being violated by quantum mechanics. And actually, it's interesting that the construction also works in the opposite direction. So in the paper on guess your neighbor input, we first gave some inequalities, and from these Bell inequalities, we could derive new examples of unextendable product basis. Some of them are tight, some of them are not. So some of them really correspond to a facet of the classical polytope, which is interesting, and some others are not. We don't have a clue about how to detect the tightness of the inequality from the product states that you have. Okay. And the last thing I want to tell you about the guess your neighbor input is on the relation with information principles. So there were many talks here about the use of information ideas to derive the set of quantum correlations. And, well, here I chose two of the ones that I found have a clear operational meaning, which is information causality and non-trivial communication complexity, okay? So in information causality, you define this task where Alice does something, sends something to Bob, and Bob does something, and they want to do a given goal. And in communication complexity, Alice and Bob get an input, and they have to compute a function of these inputs in a distributed manner. So as you can see in these, I mean, many of these information principles are stated in a bipartite scenario, okay? So in information causality, Alice gets a string of bits. She sends a string of bits to Bob, who makes some measurement, who makes something, and they have to do something. And also communication complexity, it's a bipartite scenario. So let's go to the multipartite scenario, okay, and generalize this principle to a multipartite scenario. Well, I think there might be different generalizations, and I chose one, which is natural, okay? I mean, you may like it or not, but it's a possible generalization. So I take a probability distribution, and I say that it's compatible with these principles whenever any bipartite object that I can derive from these multipartite correlations is compatible with these principles, okay? And this is what we do for non-signaling, okay? So whenever we have a non-signaling, you can also say that this has been defined in a bipartite scenario. And when you go to a multipartite scenario, what you demand is that even if the parties join into two groups, these parties cannot signal to this other group of the parties, okay? So no signaling, when you define a signal to the multipartite scenario, you also do it in a bipartite manner, okay? We don't have anything like any definition of multipartite no signaling. We took the definition that was given for the bipartite scenario, and we go to the multipartite scenario. So again, I will do the same, okay, in my case. Well, then what we prove, again, using guess your neighbor input, is that if you do that, well, we have some examples of correlations for which we can prove that any bipartite correlation that you can derive from this is classical, but they violate guess your neighbor input, okay? And when I say that any bipartite object, I mean different possibilities. So one possibility is that you have, so the simplest case of three parties is that you have A, B, and C. So you have an example where A, you correspond the bipartition A versus BC, okay? Then the correlation is classical, so it's a local model for these correlations, now seen as a bipartite concept. You can also do the same for B versus AC, C versus AB. But you can consider other possible bipartite objects that you can derive from these correlations. So, for instance, you can see are the correlations between B and C when Alice chose a given input and got a given result, okay? Of course, you want that this object has to be compatible with your principle, okay? Otherwise, you would be able to prepare this object by taking these three boxes, putting an input, waiting for getting this output, and giving these two boxes to two parties who could violate this principle. So you want that any possible object that you can establish using these three or more boxes, any bipartite object, has to be compatible with the principle. So what we did is that any object is classical. So we have a tripartite distribution, which is classical A versus BC, B versus AC. It's also classical for any possible post-selection given one of the parties. The resulting state for the other two parties is also classical, has a local hidden variable model. So since the object is classical, well, it cannot violate any possible principle you can imagine, okay? Otherwise, I mean, the principle would be not a good principle. But, I mean, we can also prove that it violates guess your neighbor input. So clearly it's not quantum. So to me, this simply means that, if you want to go further with this information principle concepts and you want to somehow reproduce the set of quantum correlations in a multipartite scenario, we will have to be ready to adapt our concept to a multipartite scenario, okay? So information causality, well, possibly there is a way of generalizing this in a tripartite scenario, but it cannot be like taking bipartition of your objects. It has to be something different. I don't know what, but it has to be something different. Okay, and the last thing I wanted to say is just that, I mean, okay, so I started by guessing your neighbor input. I was telling you the different results that we got, and I think, as Valerio also explained in his talk, what all this shows is that the structure of multipartite correlations is complex, okay? So, I mean, going from 2 to 3 is a significant step, okay? And there are many things that are lacking, and even the information ideas, I mean, are hard to apply in this scenario. So here I will go to the basics, okay, which is even the definition of, say, locality, okay? To show you that things are at least more complex than what I expected, okay? So, okay, now I consider the simplest example of three parties that have access to the three boxes, okay? One for Alice, one for Bob, and one for Charlie. And I want to consider what we mean by locality and genuine multipartite non-locality. So locality is clear, okay? So it's the definition that I gave before. Well, it's in one of my slides. So well, anyway, it was there. Okay, the definition of standard locality, well, it's, you have it here, so you have something for Alice, and here you have something for Bob times something for Charlie. This is the standard definition of locality. And the operational meaning that we give to this definition, these are the correlations that the boxes can establish whenever you wrote classical symbols, and you produce an output given the input and given what was written in the box before. Okay, so everybody agrees with this, I guess, okay? But, of course, in the multipart scenario, you can think, so if you have a situation where Alice is separated from Bob and Charlie, who have a singlet, well, this is in contradiction with the definition of locality, but there is no genuine tripartite non-locality. There is only non-locality between two of the parties. And this is why people wanted to go beyond the standard definition of locality, and they introduced the definition of genuine multipartite non-locality. Okay? So what you demand then, for instance, is that the probability distribution cannot be written in this form. So if the probability distribution has this competition, well, I mean, there might be some non-locality, but it's only between two of the parties, okay? Because Alice has a local decomposition with Bob and Charlie together, okay? And then genuine multipartite non-locality is some of the definition, is the situation where these decompositions are not possible, okay? If you have a probability distribution between three parties, among three parties, where this decomposition is not possible, you say that this object is genuine multipartite non-local. Good. And, well, this has an operational meaning, okay? So whenever you have this decomposition, what you want is that this decomposition, which somehow mathematically is intuitive, we also want this decomposition to have an operational meaning, okay? And the operational meaning is, for instance, the following. Imagine that this is an example of the decomposition which has this form, and now you allow Bob and Charlie to be together, so they have the two boxes, okay? Well, if they have this, what you want is that, well, even if Bob and Charlie are together, they cannot violate a Bell inequality, say, CHSH with Alice, okay? Because there is no locality between them. If I put them together, there is no non-locality. There is no non-locality with Alice, so they cannot violate any Bell inequality with the remaining party, okay? And also, we even if they are together, we don't want them to violate what is called the Veliczny inequality, which is an inequality for these objects, okay? So this is some of the operational meaning that we give to this definition. I guess everybody agrees with this. Okay, it's good because this is wrong, okay? So, I mean, this interpretation of the inequality is not, of this decomposition is not correct, okay? And I will tell you why now. So, we have examples of probability distribution that have this form and for which Alice can violate a Bell inequality with Bob Charlie. So it seems like impossible, you see, because you have a local model when Bob and Charlie are together, but you can violate. And the reason... Oh, okay, good. All right. And the reason is the following. So, well, we have examples of tripartite correlations for which we have a bilocal decomposition Alice versus Bob Charlie, but still Bob and Charlie can violate a Bell inequality with A, okay? And they can even violate a Svedlicin inequality that was invented for these bilocal decompositions. And the main intuition for finding this is that in this definition of bilocality, somehow you are assuming that the inputs are given and they are put in the box as soon as they are given, okay? So you give the inputs and you put them in the box and you get the output. This is what this is showing here, okay? But of course, if you allow Bob and Charlie to be together and having access to the boxes, they can do more things that were not covered by this definition. Okay? So in particular, what they can do, they can do the following. So Bob takes the box, puts the input, gets the output, and this output goes to the box by Charlie. Since now they are together, this doesn't cost anything, and they regenerate the output. Okay? And using this trick, we have inequal probabilities where you have this bilocal decomposition, but Alice can violate a Bell inequality with Bob Charlie, and they can violate a split litany. Okay? Well, all this, what he's saying is that if you define a set of good correlations, if you want to give an operational meaning to the definition of a genuine multi-pattern non-locality, I think your definition has to be consistent with the situation where two of the parties go together, come together, and they make any possible operation on their boxes, okay? And what happens is that the previous definition is not consistent with this operational meaning, okay? So it's not, technically, it's not closed under these wirings, okay? You have points that have this decomposition, but you can make some processing that apparently seems valid according to the definition of genuine multi-pattern locality, and you can see that this decomposition is no longer valid, okay? So we need, this decomposition is not valid, and we need to impose some extra conditions to get something that is consistent with this set of operations. So, well, one first try is that they say, okay, what I will do, I will define that Bob and Charlie can have correlations, but they have to be compatible with no signaling. So no signaling should be respected also at the level of the hidden variables, okay? Which means that for all the variables, for all the correlations here, if I sum over Bob, what Charlie sees is independent of Bob's input, and the opposite for Bob, okay? So this is a possible definition, and you can see that for this definition, you don't have the previous problems I mentioned before, okay? You can do whatever you want with you can put the two parties together, they can do whatever they want with the boxes, and they won't be able to violate embedded inequality Alice versus Bob Charlie, or any Svetlitch embedded inequality. So it's closed under these wirings of the boxes, okay? Even when two of them are joined wirings. So you could, I would say this is, it's good. I mean, it's satisfactory, okay, because you put in a signal into your definition of bilocality. But now you may wonder whether this is the biggest set that is compatible with this consistency under the wirings, and it's not, okay? So we have identified another definition that was also considered by Barrett and Pironio, which is also close under these wirings. And we think that it has a clear operational meaning. So, and actually, I think this is the right, we think that this is the right definition of bilocality, which is the following. So you have a tripartite probability distribution, and we'll say that it's bilocal whenever you can write it in this form. And this object, B versus C, it's an object where B is well-defined. It's an object where B can signal to C, but C cannot signal to Bob. So since C cannot signal to Bob, this means that what Bob sees is independent of what Charlie does. Okay, so if you sum over Charlie results, Bob result does not depend on Charlie's input. But the opposite is not true. So here I was demanding no signaling, let's say, in the two directions. Okay, so here I'm getting a weaker requirement, so I'm only demanding that there cannot be signal from one party to the other. Okay, but I'm also demanding the same from Charlie to Bob, but in a different decomposition. So if the correlation that meet the two decompositions, okay, and this is slightly strictly weaker than this, then I have something which is close under wirings. Okay, so this is a valid definition of bilocal where I don't have these problems of being inconsistent with the set of operations. So if you want some kind of pictorial representation of that, so you can again define the set of bilocal distributions, and then this is the standard definition which was given in the paper by Svetlitchny some years ago, okay? And what we prove is that you can consider these wirings of the boxes that are not fully non-local, okay? And you can prove that a point here leaves this set, okay? So it's not consistent with this definition. While we have the set of no signaling imposed at the level of the hidden variables, which is closed, but we have a larger set which is also compatible with this definition. And of course now it would be interesting to prove that this is the larger set which is compatible with this consistency under wirings. Okay, and with this I come to the conclusion, which is basically this of the open questions, okay? And just to give some of the possible open questions that follow from what I explained. So some in my talk, I first introduced the game of guess your neighbor input. Then I told you that it's good to falsify Gleason correlation. It's good to somehow falsify information principles or bipartite information principles. So I think guess your neighbor input touches something which is intrinsically multipartite. I don't know what, I don't know how to identify, but there is something there which is intrinsically multipartite, because it, whatever that was satisfying in the bipartite case fails in the multipartite case when you consider get your neighbor input. These Gleason correlations were equal to quantum correlations in the bipartite case. They are no longer valid, and the way we detect this failure of this concept is by guess your neighbor input. Information causality might be satisfying the bipartite case, but when you go to the multipartite case, you see that it fails by violating guess your neighbor input. Okay, so I think there is something there, but I don't know what. So I think it's an interesting problem to study this task. And in particular, I think it's interesting to study. So of course, as I told you, I mean, this is a task for which you have a violation by no signaling correlation. So clearly there are no signaling points that are violating this inequality. So it would be interesting to understand what are the information consequences of the existence of those correlations violating this principle, or this principle, this inequality. I wouldn't say it's a principle. It's just an inequality. And, I mean, also inspired or following this discussion, I think it's interesting to start wondering about use of multipartite, intrinsically multipartite information concepts, and see and to contrast these multipartite information concepts with guess your neighbor input, okay, and see whether they are able to go up to one, okay, go down until one for the violation. Well, then, from a more technical point of view, I think it also the relation that between an extendable product basis and Bell inequalities with no quantum advantage is, well, interesting. And for instance, it would be interesting to understand when this construction leads to type Bell inequalities. Sometimes it does, sometimes it does not. Well, I don't know. Well, okay, so I think this is interesting. But also, I think a very interesting question is whether these irrelevant or Bell inequalities with no quantum advantage exist in the bipartite case. Okay, so we have no example. So guess your neighbor input is a construction that you can also define for the bipartite case, but it's useless. I mean, it doesn't give you anything. The first non-trivial construction appears for three parties. So at the moment, it's unknown whether there exists Bell inequalities which are not violated by bipartite quantum objects. Okay? So or whether all Bell inequalities in the bipartite case are relevant for quantum mechanics. And of course, I think also even what I told you at the end of my talk on this definition of V-locality, I think it's something that we didn't expect when we considered this question, and I think even the definition of genuine multipartite non-locality is not clear. So, to me, the right definition should be to identify the largest set which is closed under this set of operations in which Bob and Charlie come together, but only a subset of the parties go together, and they can do whatever with the boxes. And I mean, fully genuine multipartite non-locality is something that you cannot do with this scenario. Okay, so to understand the limits of this scenario, I think it's also an interesting problem. And with this, I thank you for your attention. Just saying that if you are interested in supporting the group, you should visit our webpage in the following days. Okay, thank you for your attention.
Thanks a lot. Are there any questions? I think this is being recorded, so it could be useful.
The example you have there at the end, where you, by wiring, you activate somehow the non-locality there, is it a quantum point, or is it a purely no-signaling point outside the quantum set? And in the second case, do you think there will be ever any quantum point that can lead to this behavior?
Do we have a quantum point, Rodrigo, about this? Do you remember? We didn't check, but I would say there is a quantum point doing that. Yeah, I would be surprised if there is no quantum point. But okay, this is just an intuition. I don't know. We didn't check.
Any further questions? I've got a question. Could the multi-party correlations in the guess your neighbor's input scenario be to the multi-party scenario the same as the PR box is to the two-party scenario?
Well, I mean geometrically no, because when you consider the so the PR box, what you do, you consider the space of correlations with binary two parties, binary input, binary output. And then you solve the, you know that there's not seen any correlation defined at polytope, and you find the extreme point, and you see that all of them are PR boxes. Okay. Now, then what you do is, okay, this is a PR box. Now, when you go to more parties, you do the same. Okay, you take the three parties. There are some numerical computational techniques that you define the scenario, three parties, binary inputs, binary outputs. You define the non-signal, you identify the non-signal polytope. You can identify the extreme points. And there are 46, was Valerio, or I don't know, 46 in equivalent. All these points are PR boxes for this scenario. Okay, so in this sense, I see all any of these points. Of course, some of these points, or the extreme points, violate gets your neighbor input. So the only analogy I could find is that as so there is a lot of or there is a significant effort trying to understand how to go down from the PR box to the set of classical and quantum, to the quantum limit. So I see also an interesting problem to start from points that violate gets your neighbor input and identify an information principle or whatever that goes down until the quantum bound, which is equivalent to the classical bound in this particular case. So it's not the same, but I think it's interesting to try to apply the same techniques that we applied for the PR box to this tripartite scenario.
So this is more of a comment than a question. So you've noticed this interesting connection between unextendable product bases and these particular kinds of Bell inequalities. That there's also a connection between Kliachko's proof of contextuality and generalizations thereof and unextendable product bases. So in the one of the first papers, there's this pyramid unextendable product bases. And it basically uses exactly the five vectors that are in Kliachko's proof on the two systems. And it turns out that you can generalize this to any Kliachko proof based on a star polygon gives you another, you get a whole family of unextendable product bases. So I don't know what the significance of that is. It might be connected to what you're describing.
Okay, I was not aware. Okay. Yeah, I think it's interesting. Well, something that I didn't mention during my talk is that in our case, we need some, maybe it was written, but I didn't mention explicitly, is that we need unextendable product bases, but they have to satisfy a property, another property. Not from every unextendable product basis we can derive Bell inequality, only from some unextendable product basis that satisfy a property that I didn't mention, okay? So in particular, from this property is satisfied by all qubit unextendable product bases. Okay, so for this, we have unextendable product bases. We satisfy an extra property, and from this, we can derive the type Bell inequality. And why we need this property? Because we also have an unextendable product basis for two-party systems. Okay, so you could say, well, then you apply your trick, and you would have a Barber type Bell inequality with no quantum violation. But what we know is that none of these unextendable product bases satisfy the property that we need to have a Bell inequality. So there is a sort of relation. We need an extended product basis with another property that we explicitly say in the paper, so it's not something magic. But, yeah, I don't know. So and it would be also interesting to relate to this Kliachko construction.
Any further questions? Please join me in thanking our speaker once more.